Woodbury Reports with your host, Lon Woodbury, talking with leading professionals about how parents and others can help their struggling teens, preteens, and young adults. Now here's your host, Lon Woodbury.
Well, good morning. This is Lon Woodbury with the Woodbury Report, and it is August 29th, 2017. On the line, I have Mark Claypool. It's good to have you here, Mark. Thank you.
It's always good to speak with you, Lon.
Well, Mark is the CEO of Chance Light, and that's a behavioral health, therapy, and education firm. And he's also an author. And the latest book he's written is How Autism is Shaping Special Education. That's very intriguing because special education has become very big in recent years, and especially in the public schools. And so he's going to tell me, how is autism doing that? So why don't you sort of give the theme, the general theme of the book, and then we'll go into some of the details.
Oh, great. Well, the book, How Autism is Reshaping Special Education, the subtitle is The Unbundling of IDEA. And the premise of the book is that the world of autism, its dominance really in the headlines relative to all other disabilities in special education, its level of advocacy, the level of legal support and political support it receives, and really even recent Supreme Court rulings have all combined to really reshape special education as we think of it in public, in our public schools.
Well, let's go a little bit of background here on special education, because it has a sort of a mixed reputation. Because I've had a couple guests on that talked to me about how people are getting shafted essentially by the special education system. They can't get the services. They have to get an attorney, and these are in the public schools, of course. And resource rooms are part of that, which are sometimes dead end. They have a kid with some special need, and they put them in a resource room, and then it's sort of an implied consent. Well, these are pretty dumb people, dumb kids, so we're not going to expect too much out of them. So it's in the background how the autism, and I think you're talking from the book, you're talking about how the advocacy of these of the parents is making a lot of difference. So elaborate on that a little bit out in the context of special education has had a mixed reputation.
Okay. Well, I think that in defense of public schools, special ed has definitely a mixed reputation. And it really, as we say, it's one federal law that's applied 50 different ways. And some states are very good at executing on it, and many states, most states, are not. And the bottom line, I think, with special education, as we think of it, is that it has a flawed legal foundation. The foundation of the laws are civil rights laws, and that has been around, since the 60s, the late 60s, when special ed really started to become a big issue, and then it kind of culminated in the signing of what became known as IDEA. By President Ford. But the premise of the law was to allow access and equity, really, for children with disabilities. And it was a law really intended to address the populations that were so prevalent in that day. And the populations that were thought of, I think, in special ed would have been blind and deaf children and children with Down syndrome or other some sort of pervasive developmental problems. Not autism, certainly. And those other disabilities are, frankly, rather static disabilities. They are not disabilities that sort of demand early intervention for a child to ultimately achieve independence. But autism is very different. We know it's a very dynamic disability. And parents who have children with autism are simply not willing to play the game of going through the bureaucracy of special ed, the fact that it could take you a year or 2 years in some cases to get a program of services negotiated and set. Sometimes, as you made reference to, you have to have your own attorney fight with the school district. You get denied and denied and denied. And it's just a game, in effect, a game of compliance. And that is how the law is written.
Yeah, so, at one point on that, one little factoid is that that I'd heard a number of years ago, this is probably in the 80s or so, is that California was mentioned specifically, but probably other states, is they had seminars on how to not spend the extra money on special education for a kid. And that was not the intent of the law at all.
No, that's not the intent of the law. And I think the Supreme Court has had so much to say about how special ed law has been seen and how it's been interpreted. In 1982, the Supreme Court ruled in the Rowley case and ruled in favor of the public school systems. And so the precedent that the Rowley case set was that public schools are not responsible for maximizing the potential of a child. They're simply responsible for providing a reasonable floor of service. Again, they're very compliance-oriented, check the box, we're going to let you into school, but we don't have to guarantee you quality sort of an approach. I'm very encouraged, though, by the recent Supreme Court ruling in the Andrew F. case, which, in my mind, really reverses largely the Rowley case. And in the findings, in his summary anyway, Judge Roberts said that the school districts should provide a set of services that match the ambitions of the child. So it's no longer just sufficient to provide access. Progress matters, and a program of services that really enable a child to achieve independence is the goal. And I'm very excited about that, and I think that fits in really with the theme of our book, that parents who were so frustrated with special education really stepped outside of public ed and made autism a healthcare issue. And 38 states now have an insurance mandate in state law that says if your child has autism, you are entitled to receive insurance benefits. Your insurance companies have to provide coverage for early autism services. And then, of course, after the private insurance companies did that, then, of course, Medicaid followed suit, as did TRICARE, the military insurance. And so more kids than ever have access to funding that's not really coming through the public school systems. And so what that has done, and I think it's going to continue to do, is take more responsibility away from the school districts. And it's going to be interesting to watch how the funding flows accordingly, because this is, as you know, a lot of kids. If you believe the numbers, and 1 in 68 kids has autism, that's a staggering number of children. And the insurance companies are not going to want to take this burden on alone. They're going to want to share in it. So there's a lot of work to do, especially compounded with this Supreme Court ruling, to navigate through and decide the best way to approach bringing services to bear for these kids.
One thing I took from reading through your book is that a large part of the chain is coming from pressure from parents of autistic children, and that it was that pressure that forced the changing in the legal status and changing in the laws to make it more. But let me go off on a might be a diversion. But what does it fit in? Sometimes people, and this is of autistic children, high functioning autism especially, and several others like ADD, that it's not a disability, it's a learning difference, or it's something with a more positive connotation. Does that fit into this conversation any?
Well, I think it's an important distinction. I think that parents who have children with autism are very leery of that conversation because they have fought so hard to make autism a medical issue, and to receive funding through insurance companies, you have to document medical necessity. So I think that parents of autism are probably going to be very reluctant to soften that language to make it sort of a learning difference, because that may impact the view of medical necessity. Again, this is going to be a fascinating dynamic to watch unfold. It really is. There's some conflicting elements here within the autism community that need to be resolved.
Well, what's the takeaway for parents from this whole thing? I think one of the things is parents of ADD or ADHD kids have seen what the autism community has done, and they're doing the same thing. Other disabilities groups are also getting the same kind of response. They learn from the autism, and that's how I took from the book, is that's how autism is shaping special education, because all these have learned, got savvy in the advocacy roles, all these disabilities.
Well, you're spot on. As much attention as autism gets, it's easy to forget that it's only the fourth most prevalent disability in special education. And the number of children, for instance, that are diagnosed with dyslexia or learning disabilities just far outweighs the number of children who will ever be diagnosed with autism. And, you know, a lot of advocacy groups are looking at parents, like, you know, parents who are banding together around dyslexia. And if autism is a medical issue, why isn't dyslexia a medical issue? And that, again, is really going to put a lot of pressure on the system as we currently know it to really change and to provide the best possible set of services and potentially good outcomes for kids.
And it's going to have a lot of pressure on the funding for public schools, because extra dollars put in for a kid with special needs is going to be seen in some quarters as taken away from the regular kids, the typical kids. And that's going to put a lot of
pressure. Yeah, that's true, and that's already happening. As you know, when IDEA was approved, when it was signed, the law actually says that the federal government is supposed to cover 40% of the cost of special ed, and the most they've ever covered is 17%. So there's no doubt that the ever-growing demands of special ed are encroaching more and more in the general ed funding. Go ahead.
Yeah, we're running close on time, so sort of wrapping it up. What would be the main takeaway from these developments for parents? What could parents do to take advantage of these changes or be aware of them?
I think that it's a very fluid, very rapidly changing environment. They need to be connected with the parents. They need to be active in advocacy groups and know their rights, because just because you know what used to be doesn't mean you know what's coming. And I really would encourage parents to try to stay abreast of this. And there are some good resources in the book as well that would help parents connect with other groups. And I would encourage them to read our book.
And I imagine another bit of the advice would be, if you don't think your child is getting the services he or she needs, speak up.
Speak up and take control of the situation. You really can't do anything without having a good assessment. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if I were a parent who had these issues with their child, I would certainly want an independent assessment of my child's situation.
All right. Well, to wrap it up, would you tell a little bit about Chance Light, what it is as a business and the services that you provide?
Certainly. Well, Chance Light Behavioral Health Therapy and Education is a company that I founded in 1999, and we operate in 27 states. We provide services for about 20,000 kids and young people a day. We work with public school districts all over the country as a provider to assist them. We work directly with state governments. We also work with families on a private basis and insurance companies. We provide in-home applied behavioral analysis therapy for children who are on the spectrum. We do have our own clinics and our own schools as well. So we try to be a comprehensive program. We're always growing and improving to meet the needs of kids that just need extra help.
All right. Well, that's very, very good. Now, if somebody had a question, if they wanted to find out Chance Light, how they might take advantage of your services, or just want to talk to you about autism and the changes, this fluid environment going on, how would they get a hold of you?
Well, the best way to reach me would be via email. I can be reached at mclaypool, that's my name, mclaypool, @ chancelight.com.
Okay, and what's the website? Is that chancelight.com also?
It is. That's mm-hmm. correct.
And did you want people to call, or they can get that on the website?
They can get the contact information on the website.
Okay. Well, that's very good. It wraps it up here. Thank you very much, Mark. This is Lon Woodbury with the Woodbury Report. We've been talking with Mark Claypool, the CEO of Chance Light and a behavior health therapy and education firm, and an author of the book, How Autism is Shaping Special Education. And we've spent the last few minutes talking about his book, and I'm sure he'd be glad to tell you, or you can find information how to order it if you like. Thank you very much. Good talking to you, Mark.
Thank you, Lon.